welcome to A Galaxy Not So Far Away, a Mysterious Galaxy podcast. I'm your host, Becca.
And I'm Gary.
And today we have with us Victoria.
Hello.
And Jenny.
Hello.
And we are going to be discussing something today that I know is on a lot of folks' minds. We're going to be talking about the death of the author. And Jenny, I'm going to poke at you early and say, since you've taught this sort of thing, can you tell us what the death of the author means?
I can. So the death of the author is the title of an essay from the 1960s by Roland Barthes. It's a work of kind of critical theory, critical literary theory in particular, that is part of the kind of post-structuralist or postmodernist movement. They are pretty much the same, but with different titles. And essentially what Barthes argues is that once an author writes a text, they die. And when he says that, he means like the text is now its own thing. It is now divorced from the author. The author can no longer exert control or influence the text itself. This is Barthes' argument. It was written in response as part of this turn in criticism, in response to what's called New Historicism, which is New Historicism understands works of art or literature or whatever it may be kind of in its context of production and really analyzes the way that context of production influences the meaning of the text itself. So this is kind of trying to remove the text from those kinds of influences and saying that the text can exist on its own and meaning in the text is fully derived by the reader in what's called reader response theory, which is kind of the way of reading essentially. And reader response theory basically means that the reader is the one that is fully interpreting the text on their own. And that's where the meaning comes from. The meaning is not coming from the author himself. The meaning is coming through the reader's interpretation.
I think that's so interesting. I had no idea that's where that came from. Mm-hmm.
And so that's like the Cliff Notes version. So yeah. I'm not going to pretend like that's all of it, but
that's the basic.
That is what Roland Barthes argues. And we can, I kind of dislike it a lot. So we can talk about
that. Yeah, I think that any bit of writing, any bit of media, any sort of artistic pursuit that someone creates has a lot of that person in it, regardless of their intention or whatever. Like I know that, you know, I've taken like fiction classes at colleges and done like fiction writing, and even without meaning to, I know that I'm on the page. When I read it back, like I know it's me, you know? Like you put so much of like yourself in characters and in the sort of narrative that you're deriving, that even if someone doesn't know you, they're getting a glimpse of like who you are anyway.
I absolutely agree. I think that it's one of those things that we, outside of the separate the art from the artist argument that has become quite popular in the past couple years, I would say that outside of that specific argument, we always hear people commending the same people that we're being critical of, that they're saying to separate the art from. Those artists are being commended for putting themselves into their work. And I'm a art student. I create comics. I create art for a living when I'm not selling books. And like every single piece, even if it has nothing to do with me, is influenced by who I am as a person, because that's just how art works. Like you can't really separate the creation. Like your interpretation is totally separate, which is something I think is beautiful, but your interpretation is influenced by the artist's being part of the art.
I think there's a bit of a push and pull, right?
Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
I don't know. I'm still trying to like formulate this, but I feel like any sort of, you know, in a piece of fiction or in a piece of art or whatever, especially in fiction, right? You have characters that are going to go on this journey. Like those characters have, not everything's political, but like they have an ideology. They have a moral compass. They have like whatever. We learn from those fictional characters, whether we mean to or not, especially as kids reading kids' books. Like, a lot of who we become can very, very heavily be influenced by the words that we're reading on the page. I think there's always, like, again, I think there's a little bit of both. I think that we bring ourselves to what we're reading as well. But I think to blindly say you can separate it seems foolish.
So, right, like, an author cannot, and I don't think an artist can ever fully control the reception of their text.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, that's not necessarily the point, right? Because oftentimes, and when we think about authorial intent and, or artistic intent, like, intent doesn't mean success. So I have to talk to students a lot about this, because texts oftentimes don't, in fact, do what they sought out to do necessarily, or the author may have done something unintentional or subconscious, or like, no, they're not actively trying to, you know, reproduce a certain stereotype, but they are.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of thing. And by the same token, sometimes authors do things that, or like, people can attach themselves to text and understand text in ways that the author could never have anticipated. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. And we see that kind of in contemporary media. And like, an example of that, right, is, or a recent example that I always think of is when Guardians of the Galaxy came out. And a lot of people or kids kind of felt connection to Drax because they read his character as autistic.
Yeah.
That happened with the new Birds of Prey film as well. Mm-hmm. Huntress, a lot of people read her not only as a lesbian, but also as on the spectrum. And I'm inclined to agree with that interpretation.
Yeah. And so, like, to a certain extent, I guess my position on that is it doesn't entirely matter what the author's intent was for that to still be a valuable interpretation and like something that adds value to readers. So it's kind of that both, like Gary was saying, the push and the pull of it. There's all sorts of things that can happen by accident that can be good or can be bad. And like, I mean, we can dive into like J.K. Rowling, but like, she is someone who has militantly tried to guard any interpretation of her books. She is so controlling over kind of the Harry Potter brand and what happens with it.
I think it's stifling at this point, that
aspect of it, like the fan culture around it took off a long time ago. And it's like she's been trying to control it ever since. And that,
I think, regarding Harry Potter too, like, it's something that I feel like we touched on in the fan fiction episode a lot, which is the fandom has taken it and ran with it and created
it their own.
Yeah, like, I don't need what she's written in order to feel like connected to the work. Like, I'm I feel significance with the work that is being created as a response and as a new leg of what she started. But like, I mean, I'm not afraid to say that, like, dude, like, it's okay. It's time that we can move on from Harry Potter. Like, there's a lot of other wizard, witch, school related fiction out there that's, you know, not chock full of like weird metaphors for serious issues, like the AIDS crisis and slavery and racism, and then like afterthought inclusivity as just like grasping for like, I don't know, relevance.
Yeah. It's kind of incredible the sort of life that the Harry Potter series has had, right? Like, I don't think anyone predicted that a children's book, right, would blow up to the enormity that it has, because like, how many other children's stories have done that?
I agree.
Not many.
And I think that, like, it was never her intention to write a story that was going to be inclusive for everyone everywhere, unfortunately, right? Like, I don't think that she expected that the series would get anywhere near the notoriety that it did. And it's, she's very fortunate that has gone that way for her. But, like, it's, now that it's blown up to this massive scale, now that everyone has it in their hands, you can look at it and be like, hey, this there's a lot of stuff in here that's not great. And it's a weird place to be in as someone who, like, maybe never took the time to read it through that lens, to, like, go back as an adult and, like, really pick apart some of what she's saying, right? What the underlying statements and some of the content is. Because when I was a child reading them and rereading them over and over, it was just magical, right? Like, this was a world unlike something that I had seen. And it was kids standing up against authority, right? Like, it's easy to boil it down to the children's story thing and not shine a light on the stuff that needs to be talked about, the problematic elements of it.
Well, and the other thing too, especially when it, like, I have, you know, like we were talking about before we even started recording, like, I have very strong opinions about this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of that does come from being the age I am. And, like, I grew up on the internet. So I've spent my entire life on the internet being constantly disappointed by people I admire. So I have no problem leaving someone behind that is a harmful part of, you know, a community that, you know, I think should, like, be upholding a certain standard of safety and, you know, inclusivity.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So, like, I don't know. I just, like, I knew, like, when J.K. Rowling said that, like, Dumbledore was gay and made it, like, a very, like, weird afterthought thing, I was, like, already very hesitant.
Yeah, yeah. I've always had very mixed feelings about that.
And then before she even, like, you know, started, like, spewing her transphobic nonsense, like, the whole, like, Nagini being, like, a trapped Asian woman thing, I was like, this needs to go. Like, someone needs to take Twitter away from her.
That made no sense.
You know, on the subject of, like, separating art from artists, like, I very much do not rock with that, because if you're consuming, like, if you go on Pottermore, if you, like, you know, watch Harry Potter movies through streaming services, like, if you interact with her media or the media of anybody that's problematic, like, you are giving them an income that supports them and then still, in a sense, is supporting their bad behavior, because you're showing that, like, well, I'm still gonna, like, enjoy the media, even though doing so gives, you know, profit to the person that is the problem.
Yeah. It's rough. Like, and I've done this before. Like, there are places that I won't go. Like, I won't spend money at Chick-fil-A because I know how they spend their money. Like, there's plenty of TV shows and movies that I don't watch because I know that the actors that are in them are problematic and have their own baggage.
Oh, I'm glad that you said that. Like, over the weekend, like, it's been blowing up over the past week that, like, Lea Michele is a terrible person.
Yeah.
That was the lead on Glee.
And, oh,
like,
she
admired Lea Michele for years. When I was in theater, like, she was someone that, like, I looked up to and aspired to. And, like, the second people were like, yeah, she's, like, a bully and, like, racist and really rude, I was like, you know, it's fine. Like, I don't need her as a person in, like, my, like, life to feel fulfilled.
I don't know if you guys saw her apology, and I'm going to use that word, like, so loosely, like, no one would understand what it meant. And it was, I don't remember that back all the way back then, but if you interpreted my behavior as this, I'm sorry.
That's not an apology.
It's like, that's like another thing. Like, this has been going circulating about her for years.
Yep.
Like, this is not, like, since she was on Glee. So, like, these things are not, it's not new, I guess. I don't.
Yeah.
I think that's the same thing, right, with the whole J.K. Rowling thing. Like, I saw a tweet that put it perfectly that was, like, white people find out that J.K. Rowling is problematic, like, every 3 months. And I was like, I mean, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Like, people just want to, like, read it, they say that it's upsetting, and then they forget about it.
Make excuses. Well,
and then, like, in between all of that, she again, apologizes, insert air quotes.
Yeah.
And a weird look. And people are like, well, no, that's not okay. And then 2 weeks go by, and they forget.
See, like,
And my feeling with the J.K. Rowling thing, so this is the thing that was not surprising to me was the, like, content. Because let's be real. If you've been paying attention, and if you haven't, no shade, but, like, do a quick Google search. Her history is there. It's been there for years. What I was surprised by was the, like, vehement forward doubling down. That was, in fact, surprising.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. But, like, it's been there for years. It's been in her books. It's in The Cursed Child, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's issues all over the place that people have been talking about. It's not like this is something that's been shrouded or hidden. It's just never been so insanely front and center.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, what she did this time, like, turned it up to 11.
Mm-hmm. I just hope it's the last straw. Like, I don't, like, if in another, like, 3 months we are talking about this same thing, I'm going to rip my hair out. Like, I just, I can't deal with it.
I'm going to tell you right now, Becca, you're probably going to rip your hair out solely because there's going to be people who are out there who are like, well, she's like this, but, and then they always have the but. No matter what, there's going to be someone who's going to support her.
I know you're right. Because I still have to deal with people supporting Chris Brown, even though, like, he has continued to become worse and worse in his aggressive behavior. Like, the last thing I read about him was that, like,
I haven't listened to him since I don't even know when. I don't even think I
ever just, like, the last thing I heard about him was that, like, Kalani, his last ex-girlfriend, has a restraining order against him because he's stalking her. And people are still like, but his music. Cool. And I'm like, no, I don't know, man.
Well, and you know, here's the, like, we're going to get another Fantastic Beasts movie.
No,
like, that's going to happen.
Ugh.
I don't think they're not going to.
It depends. If the actors are like, you know what? No. Then how are they going to do it without the main lead?
I don't know what the contracting is between Rowling and Warner Brothers.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they make the next one without her at all, because, like, even her current publisher for her new children's book is refusing to work with her.
Yeah.
Like, none of the editors there will work with her.
Warner could solely say, like, you know what?
I'd be
we have what we need. You're out.
If it went that way.
I would, if they went that way, they will blow up like a Disney status, because people will support that. Hands down, people will back
that. But then does that make it good for us to go and watch the next Fantastic Beasts movie?
I mean, no, because there's still problematic people that are cast in it, honestly.
There's that. And then there's also, like, I guess it depends on who ends up writing the script.
Yeah. And, like, for me, it's almost like, completely having nothing to do with this, like, that whole Sonic thing where it was, like, bad art, and then they listened to the people and they changed it. It's like, I'd almost feel like it's a principle I'd have to go see it, because if Warner was like, we're not with Rowling anymore, she's getting none of the profits.
I don't know if they could.
I would want to support that choice.
So, based on the history of, like, how J.K. Rowling has trademarked Harry Potter and exerted her trademark power,
I
doubt that will happen.
Yeah.
I don't know the details of, like, the contract, but the extent to which, like, because we know how she has, you know, controlled the branding of Harry Potter, and how people who have, you know, dared to respond in their own way through these characters have tried to, like, how that's been shut down. I don't know how they would be able to remove her from something that is Harry Potter.
I do want to say this. I kind of want to steer, because I think I would be remiss to not bring this up, which is, it's so interesting to me how, even when we're talking about these sorts of issues and of, like, creators literally shooting themselves in the foot by being predatory and problematic, we see such a fast response to, like, you know, we see the publishers publicly refusing to work with J.K. Rowling because of what's happening. But then, like, just today, I woke up to news again of the former Batgirl co-writer Cameron Stewart being accused by dozens of like women and queer people in the comic book industry of grooming like underage girls. And like today alone, like I'm looking at a list of like 30 different men and like one lady in comics that are all known, you know, sexual harassers, predators, groomers of underage girls. And the thing is, none of these names are like new. Like I feel like men get away with this stuff and like they still have work and like there's no solid consequences. It's just like survivors yelling into the void. Yeah. And that's like part of what pisses me off. But then like, and I'm saying this like as someone who is part of the trans community and extremely pissed off at J.K. Rowling, but like I think it's insane that we are getting results to the anger against her so much faster than we are to like dangerous like rapists and pedophiles in the community who people are like, yeah, like there's like, you know, people that have been like physically and emotionally and mentally like permanently damaged by these people. And everyone's like, well, you know, that's just how it is. But then it's like J.K. Rowling is like a shitty transphobe and everyone's like, burn her at the stake. And I think that it's this type of shit that vilifies transphobic like women because they're like, well, look at me. I'm a woman and I'm being like crucified or however you want to say it for voicing my opinion.
It's almost turning them like,
yeah, like martyrs. They feel like if they say whatever that they are going to be, you know, like really like thrown in the dirt and in the mud and like lose money. But like men do all this shit and worse all the time in this industry and like get new job opportunities.
I mean,
yeah,
I don't, that is something across the board. I don't, maybe I'm jaded, but that doesn't surprise me. Like women are not allowed to mess up in their professions. I mean,
it's just so exhausting to me. Like, I don't think I know a single queer trans or female creator in like comics specifically that hasn't been harassed or like groomed or something, had something very inappropriate happen to them by like a trusted member of the comics community. And like, there's always this like weird, like, it's an industry secret thing. Like, oh, I knew he was like that. Like when like Survivor finally comes out and is like, hey, like this happened to me. And then all of a sudden, all of these like dudes that are friends with said perpetrator are like, oh yeah, like I knew about this. Like, why didn't you say anything?
Yeah. Why did it take this long? And why are you going to let it keep happening?
I feel like, and this is just like a personal opinion, that it's almost like a domino effect. So the higher, okay, so person A is like the bad guy, and then his close buddies who are at that same level of hierarchy don't say anything. So then the next level doesn't say anything. So then the next level doesn't say anything because all of the lower levels are too scared to. And whatever reason they're too scared to. Even when
people say stuff, nothing happens, right?
Well, like, I think it's the frustrating thing to me is this is my opinion based on seeing this happen over and over again. And I mean, when I say this, I am specifically talking about the comics industry because it is where I am most immersed.
Yeah.
Which is, I get this feeling that people would rather be silent because they know that like there's a potential job connection or like there's a potential professional relationship. Mm-hmm. And like they would rather protect that possible like monetary value for themselves than help like dozens of potential victims of said bad person.
I don't think it's always just like this happens in academia a lot as well.
Oh yeah.
I don't think it's just like a monetary fear. I do think it's like a fear of the power dynamics we can broadly sweep, our society is built on white supremacist power dynamics.
Yeah.
That's it. And there are industries that have grown up and that these, you know, the values of who built our country way back when are always going to be influencing our system that they helped create, no matter what. Like, that's, yeah. And that's a crappy truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I don't, like, I mean, I literally had a professor who was my boss talk to me about how, like, when Me Too happened, when he was a professor at a different university, he, you know, he knew there was a professor that was, like, sleeping with his graduate students and exerting that power, but everybody knew. So he doesn't know what to do now, 30 years later. Like, and he...
And it's like, you should just, like, I don't say something.
Should have said something. I, like, that's all I can say. Yeah. Like, this is a culture of, like, that.
Everyone's afraid to speak.
Yeah, I can keep going, but that is.
No, but it's true. It's everywhere. It's just the culture. Like, when I was 19, I was a hostess, and this line cook, like, tried to, like, you know, get with me, and, like, he, like, you know, tried to assault me, like, twice, like, by, like, you know, getting me super drunk when I was 19. Nice. And then after everything, like, blew up with him and I was like, I don't want to talk to you anymore, he told, like, all the other, like, line cooks, like, that we had, like, you know, had sex or whatever. And so he was, like, harassing me at work every time I had to go into the back of house.
Nightmare.
And
it's
so
it's about power.
And so one day we had the district manager mm-hmm. there. And I went to him because, like, I felt so unsafe and unable to do my job. And I remember my manager coming to me and being super angry that I went to his boss before him. And he looked at me and was like, what, are you trying to quit? Because it's a Friday in the middle of a rush and I don't know what you want. And I was like, I remember just looking at him and being like, I just want to be able to do my job.
Yikes.
Like,
yeah.
And, like, I remember that was what, like, everyone wasn't mad about the fact that I was being harassed. Everyone said that I, like, messed up because I went to my, boss's boss before him.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's just, I think that it sucks, like, being a survivor of, like, grooming and yeah. continued sexual harassment mm-hmm. and sexual assault and abuse. Like, it sucks that we are the ones who have to put our, like, careers and our safety and our, like, mental health on the line to tell the truth. When, like, there are people that aren't being victimized that if they could just, you know, give a little bit of a shit about another person and, like, damn the consequence, that they could, like, help bring awareness. Like, I feel like it always falls to the survivor's shoulders, and it's extremely disheartening, especially in communities like literature, where yeah. It prides itself on being a place for marginalized people to speak their truth.
All right. Literature departments are, like most academic departments, are very white and very male, yeah. and
I mean, I feel like it's just everything. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole culture of everything seems to be built the same way, right?
It is.
Like, it's everywhere. It's pervasive.
I don't know. I get frustrated because it is. And, like, to pretend that it isn't doesn't help anything.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a sort of, like a hopelessness that comes with this, which is, like, what can we do? Like, I know that in our personal lives we could root out those people that we know of, but, like, how do you extend that outward to, like, change the culture, right? Like, this is going to be a thing that feels like there's no end to it.
I feel like the thing that will actually change things is agreed upon, like, community policing, in a sense. Like, we as, like, a industry, we as a community have to not only call out this behavior, but there has to be actual consequences to these people.
Yeah.
Like, not carrying their books, not, like, advertising their, you know, work, you know, not giving them new work, like, publishers blacklisting predators. Like, the only way that serious change is going to come, like, for example, this is a perfect one. So there are two creators, Eddie Berganza and Eric Esquivel in the comic community, that are both known sexual harassers. One of them is a literal rapist, and they were blacklisted to the point where, like, books got canceled in the middle of them. No one would speak to them, to the point where, like, they have now, this is insane too. Like, I just want to point this out. They have their own publishing group that they've started that specializes in Latino and Latina stories, like, made by creators of, like, the same, like, heritage, yeah, because they're both Latino. And it's like targeting young creators of that demographic who are also the exact demographic of their victims.
That's
sick. And so, and it's been, this is a fantastic example of the community doing what it has to do, because everybody knows about this and everybody is talking about it to make sure that, like, others are safe, to make sure that, like, young creators know that this is, like, a potential threat from actually very harmful people. And it's ruining these two men's careers, like, to the point where they often have to, like, put their social media on private, because every time they post, they're just slammed with, like, hey, remember that you are an awful person?
Yeah.
And I think that this is what it, like, needs to be, you know? Like, I don't think, if we can't, you know, act for legal ramifications for people's terrible predatory behavior, we have to, as a community, reprimand them in the only ways that we are able to. I mean, that's obviously my personal opinion, and I do feel that it can be considered a quite radical opinion, and I understand that my bias comes from being a survivor, but I'm just, yeah, like, I'm 25, I shouldn't be this jaded about, like, predators in every facet of my life.
Yeah.
So, I don't, first of all, Becca, I don't think that is that radical of a position, honestly. I do think one of the issues with J.K. Rowling in particular, and I do think that this is something that is unique because of how her books blew up,
mm-hmm,
and what I think is also making this incredibly, like, even more hard for people, is how community, like, you know, we can say, like, yes, okay, she uses some heavy-handed metaphors. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. But the books are also about standing up to bigotry in her books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there has been research studies that have shown that people who read Harry Potter are more likely to stand up against Trump. By, like,
insane,
a huge percentage. Like, crazy high percentage. And as much as she fought to control that community, there, she did not. Like, she can't. It was impossible. It became something, yeah, so much more than any one person's beliefs could ever, like, mm-hmm, control how the books were taken. Like, especially, like, if we're going back to the fan fiction, right, episode, where, like, through these characters, you know, a lot of people have, you know, felt free to explore queer identities.
Yeah.
And queer sexual identities. And that,
I mean, that's absolutely true. I know so many queer people that, mm-hmm, discovered who they were because of Harry Potter. And that's why it makes me so angry that this, yeah, is happening.
Like, I have no desire to read the Robert Galbraith books. I've read about, mm-hmm, them for, again, it's not news that there's been criticisms of them, and I decided that that was not something that I wanted to read.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that I do think that is something exceptional about Harry Potter. And it's in a lot of, like, the fan communities that I've seen responding, like, it has been very split. Like, I do think there's plenty of people that are right there with you, Becca, and are, you know, like, saying, like, no, we're done with this. There's also a lot of people who, like, it's hard to let go of the kind of personal significance that this thing had for them for so many years. And to invalidate that connection because she's a douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
is also like, that doesn't, that's a hard position. And I think that that has to be a very personal relationship that people have to reckon with. And I do think that that is something, again, very specific to Harry Potter and what became of it as a phenomenon. Like,
no, absolutely. I agree. Like, I don't want anyone that is a fan to think that I'm critical of them. Mm-hmm. Unless they are flat out ignoring the issue. But I do want to say that, like, I don't think that you're implying that, but like, I think for me, like, so much of my willingness to like drop anybody mm-hmm. on a dime has a lot to do with the fact that I am a survivor. So like,
yeah,
I mean, I was betrayed by people who I like gave genuine personal trust to, so I feel much less like, even though I like love certain creators, like, I mean, like, just as an example, like, if I found out tomorrow that like Gerard Way was like a predator, like, it would tear me apart because he's meant so much to me. However, I would completely be willing to just leave him behind and like have the fond, you know, feelings, mm-hmm. like memories that I have. Yeah. But like, I think it's like, for a lot of folks, especially those that have been like, you know, personally affected by these sorts of things by people close to them, mm-hmm. it's much easier to say like, oh, well, let's just throw them out then. Like, they're clearly garbage. Because I mean, when that happens to you with someone you actually know, it's so much easier to separate from a celebrity who you will never know.
Yeah, that's true. It's also like, you know, I think I do fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't, I'm also not going to go out of my way and read the Robert Galbraith books or whatever, but like,
I don't even know these books.
They're fantasy, I don't know. Not fantasy. They're a mystery series that she does. Yeah.
Under the name of,
oh, that's her pseudonym. Oh yes.
Yeah.
And there is a character in, I believe it's the Silkworm, who is trans, and I think is,
I have heard of that.
Criminal. Oof. And that came under a lot of criticism. Awful. When it was published. Like, again, awful. These are things that are not new.
But like, yeah. I think I've mentioned it on the show before, but like, I do a Harry Potter podcast with a friend of mine, and we've been on break for a while. And then all of this has been like escalating over the last several years, actually. But, we've been having a really weird conversation lately about like, we want to keep doing this show. But now I think that like, part of that discussion has to be like, here is why this is problematic. Like, I don't know that I can approach it with the same sort of like, oh, we're just going to talk about like this fantasy world.
Yeah.
And so we've been having an ongoing conversation recently about like, what's going to be different when we come back to do this, because like, I do still want to talk about this series. It was something that meant a lot to me as a kid growing up, but like, I'm much more interested now reading it and like doing the work, you know?
It's like these kinds of like, you know, revelations, whether or not like when you learn about them, like,
yeah,
it changes your relationship to a text, right? And
absolutely.
I do think like there needs to be like it's hard, and it's so like, I was listening to Roxane Gay did like a Twitter live, and somebody asked her about Juno Diaz. So I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Juno Diaz, but he is a Latino Caribbean writer. He wrote The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, a huge press. He has two other books. They're collections of short stories. He's a wonderful writer. He's a great speaker, but you know, I'll keep explaining this. In, you know, kind of in the post Me Too movement, women who had dated him came out and said, like, he's a misogynist. Now, his books have a character named Junior. He narrates all of his books, and Junior is kind of a version of Juno Diaz, and Junior does not have great attitudes towards women.
Oof.
But like in his most recent collection, which is title of it is This Is How You Lose Her, I think. No, I'm trying to see it from the corner of my eye, but I can't find it. This Is How You Lose Her. Like, the stories are also about, like, there is, I think, evidence of him not being the person he was 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Sure.
And his contemporary identity is not that. And I do think that that's something that is in the novel, and that you can see that idea of learning in the novels. Mm. Going back to J.K. Rowling, again, what has surprised the hell out of me is the fact that she refuses to learn.
Yeah.
Like, there's none of that. Yeah. Sort
there's
of.
Been a doubling down instead.
There's yeah, no there's growth. Absolutely no growth.
And I do feel like, no, Jenny, you continue.
Oh, sorry. Just to close it up, back to like what brought it up with the Roxane Gay AMA, because she's, you know, previously like really lauded all that Junô Díaz has written, because as she said, he's a beautiful writer. And he's a writer, if you want to learn about, you know, the Caribbean and kind of that mixed Caribbean, he's a good writer. He has kind of been trotted out as like the poster boy for that culture, which that's a problem.
Yeah.
But like, she's like, he's a prick, right? Like, you can, it's going to change your relationship to the text, but yeah, it doesn't mean that what he wrote isn't, because the, like, it's there. I don't, the evidence of his past is in his writing. It's very clearly there. I don't think it's hidden at all. My first response when I heard was like, I don't understand why people are surprised about this. But also actually, like, and that's without knowing any facts about like his personal life, other than
the yeah,
fact that it was based on him. Like, but he's also very, like, I think my reading of it is that he is critical of himself through that character. And I have kind of always read it that way.
Hmm.
So that's...
I think that you see that a lot with writers. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, mm-hmm, I think a lot of writers like to write in a way that's critical of their problematic behavior and, like, acknowledge it that way. And then just completely step away from it and not like change necessarily yeah, in their personal day-to-day life. And I think that it's very much like, it's akin to the same sort of like in love with your depression sort of thing that gets like thrown around a lot. Like, I feel like, oh, there's like this societal thing of like the tortured artist that really sinks mm-hmm, into writers, where like, it's fine if a writer is a dick because he's making wow, beautiful art. Goodness.
There's a narcissism there.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Only if they're male.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know. I work on a lot of authors who I think are being self-critical in their books and working through their own kind of problems and their own challenges in their writing. I think that, like, the historical evidence is there for it, because many of the people that I study are no longer living.
Yeah.
But I also study a lot of manuscript materials and things like diaries and letters and kind of those other areas of writing and self-representation beyond like published novels, say. Yeah. And ideas do change, and I think that's important. I think that I don't think that there's, this sounds, I don't know, trite, but like, nobody's perfect, but I mean that in a very critical way, in that like.
But I agree. I feel like there's a lot of. We expect
somebody to not have any of this. Like, we need to understand these problems to engage with the text in the first place, because we need to understand like the other side, I guess.
Well, and I feel like too, like, I agree with you, because I feel like there's this disconnect sometimes, especially in like modern criticism of creators being problematic and just like people in general. Like, I think that there's entirely room for people to change. Yeah. And if people are willing to look at themselves and what they've done and their behavior and the ways that they are harmful and be critical and work through that and like come out at the end a better person and a different person than they were when they were a problem, like, I think that that exists, and I think it happens all the time. Like,
mm-hmm,
I think that everybody is worthy of redemption if they prove that they are working hard.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like, for me, you know, again, I'm extremely biased because of what I've gone through in life. I feel like there are exceptions to that. But like, if 10 years from now, you know, like, J.K. Rowling was like, I shut my mouth and I listened to transgender people and I apologized and I was being transphobic and I was being problematic and I did write things that were racist and sexist and homophobic and all of that. Like, I would be willing to forgive her. Like, but yeah. This, like, and the other thing I want to say, because I feel like this is really, really important to say about J.K. Rowling. The Sun recently did an entire front page article interviewing her abusive ex-husband and him, like, openly, like, calling her terrible things. They dragged her through the mud for, like, having a miscarriage, like, all this terrible stuff. I just want to say that, like, I don't believe any abusers or bad people should be given platforms to just speak at, like, however they want. I don't think that that was okay. I don't think that she deserved to be, like, abused or hurt or manipulated just because she's transphobic. Like, I just want to very clearly say, like, I may have, like, intense feelings about forgiveness and change mm-hmm. and things like that for bad people, but nobody ever deserves to get hurt. J.K. Rowling did not deserve to be abused, and she did not deserve to have to deal with seeing her ex-husband being interviewed like he mattered at all. And I think it was just really, really a disservice, like, especially amidst everything that was happening.
Yeah.
God, I can't believe they ran that front
page. I can't either.
Oh, God. All right. This was a long one. Well, not a long one. This felt like a long one. How do you guys
feel? It's actually the shortest one we've done, I think.
I was going to say, I don't think it's been that long.
Yeah. It feels heavy.
I don't think it has either.
To me.
Well, I mean, I think it has a lot of weight to it and a lot of intense feelings. And so that might be what's making it feel like it's a long one.
I know what you mean. I'm just saying.
Because it's not like our light, like, brooding villains.
We should do another episode like that soon.
I was going to say, we need to do a light episode soon because I feel like the past couple episodes we've done, I've just spent a lot of time yelling about stuff. Really
intense. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm happy to keep yelling. I don't know what everybody else is talking about.
We can keep yelling. Does anyone have more? I mean, we can keep this going.
People are terrible.
People are terrible.
But also good sometimes. It's very complicated. Yep. I do not like it.
It just felt like we were wrapping up or that it was winding down.
There's a huge spectrum of, like, people being terrible or people being bad that are not extremes that I think is always important when we consume media, if that makes sense and is vague.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that's important. I think it's important to understand the context in which something was produced. I think it's important to understand the influence it had at its time, just as important as it is to understand its contemporary influence. And I think it's okay for things to be problematic, but I do think you need to interrogate that and kind of hold yourself accountable for people that were victimized by that person's terribleness. If that makes sense. Like,
it does.
Like, I don't know. Everybody has to reckon with that themselves. There's a ton of things in my life that are, like, problematic on a much smaller scale than J.K. Rowling that I enjoy and that I continue to engage with, but that I'm going to continue to interrogate. And I hope that people, you know, kind of do that same work.
Yeah.
And the other thing, like, I will say, like, as far as giving platforms, like, and kind of tying it back to Mysterious Galaxy, like, there have been conversations that we've had in the last few months about who we're going to give a platform to. And these kinds of conversations are things that we are thinking about and that we are taking into account and responding to in how we are moving forward. And I hope that our customers and our community trust us to do that. And if they don't, please know that we are doing that and thinking about that when making decisions.
Yeah. I just want to say too, like, as you know, a member of many marginalized communities, this is the first job I've ever had where I actually feel safe all of the time and I feel respected and seen and heard. And I do just want to say, like, thank you to Jenny and Matt and everybody at the store for, like, actually giving a shit. Like, not just superficially caring, but actually, like, hearing me and making changes and supporting communities that deserve the support. Yeah. And I do think that Mysterious Galaxy is going in the right direction. Like,
all I can say is we're trying, and to kind of going back to, like, what we started with at the beginning is, like, what are we supposed to do about, like, the world sucking and the world,
yeah,
you know, our culture being built on these foundations that are, we can't just ignore, and that they're not going to get erased. But what do we do to combat that? Like, there are people on our, in our notes for this episode that we have, you know, declined to do things with in the last 2 weeks, or declined to try and do, yeah, things with in the last 2 weeks because of their history with things like this. And
yeah,
that is a decision that, you know, we feel good about, that we support, and that, like, that's all we can do, right? Like, how, that's all anybody can do is, you know, be conscious of what they're doing, use whatever platform they have and whatever space they have it to help educate, to share knowledge, to, you know, take that burden away from the people who are most affected by this terribleness. And yeah, like,
yeah,
that's what you can do. And that's not a non-actionable thing. That's not a impossible mountain to climb. But hopefully, like, I don't know, I believe, like, the only thing that's going to make it better is if people are doing this on a small scale more consistently, as opposed to, like,
yeah,
trying to revolutionize something in the moment. That's important, and that is good, and that is doing a lot. But the other important thing is just to make these smaller changes all the time, and to have that be a question. Like, when you are, when you're reading books, right, think about who were the last authors you read. Maybe read a different, like, an author from a different demographic.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely, like, the right thing to do, right? Like, this is something that specifically I have seen asked of people over and over again by, like, the Black community, which is, you know, like, don't just be vigilant and don't just, you know, invoke change when it's trending. Like, you have to make permanent changes to what is going on in your day to day to invoke actual change. And I think that that's something that the store is moving towards.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that we should link to the thing that we're doing through Instagram. Thing? With the charities, with the,
oh yeah.
Oh yeah, we should definitely talk about that.
God, why can't I think of the word? Someone else talk. I can't talk.
So through June, Mysterious Galaxy is kind of trying to give back to our community, and we would like to encourage other people to do so as well, in addition to what we're giving back. So we are asking that if anyone donates to the National Center for Transgender Equality, which is a national organization, or the Brown Building, which is a San Diego, an organization local to San Diego, that if you donate and you send us, you know, proof of your donation, there's no minimum amount, you will be entered to win a gift card for Mysterious Galaxy. Through June 30th, right? 30th,
yeah.
Nice. Yes.
What so Jenny said.
That gives people
2 weeks. I had to write that copy.
Just under 2 weeks from when this episode comes out. So I'll have information in the description, mm-hmm, for people listening when this comes out. Awesome.
On a lighter note.
They're great organizations.
Yes. Yeah, oh, I was just going to say, on a lighter note, what's everyone reading? Are you guys reading? I haven't been reading. I won't lie to you. Too much going on.
Well, I'm reading bits and pieces of books for our Fantastic First program. So I'm kind of, like, picking and choosing different books and reading, like, the first, like, 10 pages or so to see what grabs me. So there's nothing I'm actually, like, reading, gotcha, reading now, which is sad because I want to actually, like, read.
You're hoping something, that one of these books, it'll grab you and that'll be it.
I'm hoping. I'm hoping one of them's like, forget all of the other books. I need to, yeah, finish this one. Hasn't happened yet, though.
I am almost done with A Song Below Water right now by Bethany Morrow, who we have an event with coming up. It's very good. It is... I'm trying to figure out how best to write a review for it right now because I'm not entirely sure how to approach it because it's very, like, not in any way that would question how good the book is, but it's so relevant.
Mm.
And it's dealing with things in a very nuanced way through fantasy, but fantasy that is in no way, like, is not a metaphoric or euphemistic use of fantasy to deal with difference. Gotcha. So it's really, really good. Almost done with it. And then I'm also reading Crazy Stupid Romance by Lissa K. Adams, which is it's delightful. I don't know how else to describe it, but it makes me laugh out loud constantly.
I'm still very slowly getting through. I'm reading Trigger Mortis by Anthony Horowitz, which is the first of his couple of James Bond books. And I'm just under halfway through. So I've been like sitting on that one on the audiobook for a couple weeks now. So I'm going to try and get back into that this week.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you, Becca? Nice. You said you weren't really reading much.
Yeah, honestly, like I started Gideon the Ninth and I really like it. And thank you again forever, Victoria, for getting it for me. But I just, there's a lot going on in my personal and in the world of life. And I just,
I feel like I haven't finished a book in like 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, I'm struggling to finish books. I mean, like I'm basically like I work on my art stuff and then I like watch some TV and go to bed.
I get that.
It's hard. Reading, like.
Reading is hard.
I know I'm in like a reading kind of boom right now, but reading is one of the things that's like the hardest thing for me to do when I am struggling with like depression and anxiety and kind of overwhelmed. My concentration is crap. And reading is really hard for me to keep up with. So I don't think anybody should ever feel bad for.
Yeah. I'm looking at my audiobook list and the last four of them that I have less than half left. And they're just, instead of finishing them, I'm getting new books.
I did over the weekend pick up a couple ARCs from the store, though, that I'm very excited about. So I'm gonna try to sit down and force myself to get through them.
I'm going to try and see if I have that Max Brooks ARC, actually. I forgot. Max Brooks, the Devolution that just came out this week.
If you don't, I do, and I can lend it to you.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I have a copy, but I don't remember.
I'll, like, mail it to the from the store to you.
Great. Amazing. What a champion. Okay, Becca, should we wrap up?
Yeah, do you wanna sing us out?
Sure, I could. I mean, you did the intro. I wasn't sure if you wanted to do the outro as well.
I'm out of energy.
That's fair. Thank you, everyone, for being here. It was nice to talk to you guys. I always appreciate when I get to chat with everybody because I don't get out of my apartment very often.
hey, that's so thank good. For being here. Stay in your apartment.
Yeah, that's a good thing right now, Gary.
I know, but like,
it just sucks.
That means most of my day I'm not like talking to anybody.
That's fair.
So I feel like I can ramble sometimes. Thank you everyone for listening. You can of course find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Mist Galaxy Books. We are still selling books online through our website at mistgalaxybooks.com. No, it's just mistgalaxy.com. You can email the podcast at podcast@mistgalaxy if you have any podcast@mistgalaxy.com if you have any questions, if you have any comments about the show, if you have anything that you want to hear us talk about, please don't hesitate to send us questions. We're always down for that. Thank you of course to Austin Farmer for letting us use the track Kill the Farm Boy from his album Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra. You can find the link to the Spotify for that in the description as well. And what am I forgetting? I think that's it.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see you guys again soon.
Oh, I'm sorry I cut you off.
Are you going to do it or am I going to do it, Gary?
Go ahead, Becca.
No, now you have to do it.
We'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away.
Yeah.